Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots nonprofit radio station in Laguna Beach from anywhere in the world on kx93.5.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. Right now, here's the Importance of Being podcast on KX93.5. All righty, this is KX93.5, and you're listening to the Importance of Being show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman. We do this show live every Sunday morning from 9 to 10. And before we get started, just a couple of quick things. Temperature is currently 58 degrees, and it is raining off and on. You know, it's kind of sad for most of my life living in California. When they said it was going to rain, you took that with a grain of salt. But now they say it's going to rain, and it actually does. So, and I guess this is going to be with us for, it looks like just a little while. It looks like it's going to clear up coming up after this hour. So hopefully it'll be all sunny and such, and you guys can really have a good time on your Sunday. Anyway, traffic is moving just along just swell at the moment. It's Sunday morning, not much going on. The Festival of Arts is having something from 12 to 3. I guess it's part of the Charm House tour, which I'm not sure is going on rain or shine. But you can either call 949-472-7503 and maybe they'll be able to tell you whether they're going to be walking around in the rain or not. Let's see. At the Artist Theater on Park Avenue, from 3 to 5, Light the Way for Change, Create a Kinder World. You can get tickets for that at https://wave.nationbuilder.com. So you can be a part of something, apparently. At the Playhouse at 2 p.m., Hershey Felder, A Paris Love Story, featuring the music of Claude Debussy, whose name I'm probably not saying right. And, No Square Theater at 630 Avenue Q. You can get your tickets at nosquare.tix.com. Beth and Steve Wood are at Gigi's Bistro. And that is that. Okay, this is KX93.5. You're listening to the Importance of Being show. And we will be right back after a couple songs.
I know you have a little life in you yet. I know you have a lot of
All right. This is KX93.5, and you are listening to The Importance of Being Show. I am your host, Ernest Hackman. We do this show live every Sunday morning from 9 to 10. And today, it's a moment that I've waited, long awaited. I have Heather Askew in studio today, and she is from JoJo's Sanctuary.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
God, that came out rough.
That's okay. It's a mouthful.
Hi, Heather. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So you have come all the way from Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
And, what are you doing in Thailand? What's that about?
So I work with an organization called JoJo's Sanctuary. I co-founded it with some of my Thai colleagues three years ago this month.
How does one get some Thai colleagues?
Well, I moved to Thailand 8 years ago. I actually went there first to work with an after-school program that worked with kids in the slums.
Okay.
And then I worked there for 3 years. Then I worked for another project that worked with kids who had actually been trafficked or sexually abused.
Okay.
So through work with those two projects, I worked with a lot of Thai people, and we kind of saw sort of gaps in service that were like allowing kids to be vulnerable to trafficking and exploitation. So we thought we would start JoJo's Sanctuary to try and address some of those gaps.
All right. So what are those gaps?
What
were those gaps? They're probably all gone now because you wiped them out.
No, not in 3 years. maybe in 10. So our mission statement is that we educate, protect, and empower vulnerable children, families, and communities in Northern Thailand. So we have a big focus on citizenship, on education, and on strengthening families.
Okay.
We actually were named after a little boy called JoJo. He was the nephew of some friends of mine who had moved to Thailand from Laos. He was living with his sisters at my friend's house. And then eventually, that's how I got to know him when he was young. But he ended up moving back to Laos to live with his father's side of the family.
Okay.
And while there, he was living with an aunt. The siblings got split up, so he was living with an aunt, and she started physically abusing him, and no one knew what was going on.
Okay.
Until suddenly my friends got a call saying that he had died, and they had to come to Laos for the funeral, and they were like, whoa, devastated. They were like, what? How did this happen?
Right.
And so it turned out they went actually and talked to the police, and the police had said, yeah, he was abused. He was basically beaten to death, and he died.
Gosh.
So it was so tragic and traumatic for me. I mean, I'd known him since he was like 3, and he was 8 when he died. And it was the same time that we were talking, that my Thai friends and I were talking about doing a family strengthening program to make families safer. And we thought, man, if there would have been a program like this for JoJo's family, this
right.
wouldn't have happened, because they
right.
would have had support. They would have had tools to deal with, you know, a rambunctious 8-year-old boy. So we decided that we wanted to honor him and his memory by naming it after him.
Okay.
So that we could prevent what happened to JoJo from happening to another child in Thailand.
Okay.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
And you grew up here, though.
I grew up in Washington State, and then I lived in Los Angeles for 10 years. I worked as a script supervisor in films and TV and commercials. So kind of a random career change, but it's been good.
Yeah. And so what drove you to make the change?
Well, I had done a couple of movies overseas. So I worked in Jordan and India and Lebanon, and we filmed in a lot of really impoverished areas.
Right.
So I kind of thought, you know, I have a broader skill set that maybe I should use it to try and like change the world on a larger scale instead of just making movies that like are socially conscious.
Oh, okay.
So the social
consciousness was in there already.
Yeah, yeah. So the movie I did in India was about human trafficking, and so that really kind of sparked my interest in learning more about that issue.
Okay, right.
So then when I went to Thailand for the first time and worked with kids who actually were living in like the slums in the red light district, and like there was so much potential for them to get trafficked. Some of them had actually already been victims of trafficking. I was like, whoa, this is like in your face. So I'm like, I can actually make a difference here. Like, this is, you know, on the ground. Never did I, a million years, did I think I would start my own organization with Thai friends. The plan was to go for a year, and now it's been 8. And now, and I've had like 3 Thai foster kids. Like, it's just been, it's kind of been all over the place.
So you kind of dug in.
Yeah. I definitely did. Like 6 weeks after I got to Thailand, one of the kids in the program was orphaned and had stage 4 tuberculosis and had no relatives. She was too old. The orphanage said she was too old because she was over 13. Oh. They don't take older kids.
Right.
So we like couldn't find any place for her, even private orphanages. There was no space for a teenager. So I was like, okay, well, right now the options are like her living on the street or and me dying. Taking her in. So I guess we'll go with that option. So I just told the Thai staff. I was like, listen, like we want to, if there really are no other Thai options, like I would be happy like
right,
taking her.
Right.
And then I just came to the office one day and she was like, okay, so I think this is where you guys should live. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? She was like, here, I'm giving you this child. I was like, I don't speak Thai. So I learned Thai really quick. And then wow. I was like, guess I'm in Thailand for longer than a year.
So you're instant parent.
Yes, instant parent.
So what was it like putting the organization together? What was involved?
It was actually really good because we're part of a kind of an umbrella foundation called Family Connection Foundation. They have, I think it's 19 different organizations that work in all areas of trafficking. So they do prevention, intervention, and aftercare. So when I was working at the after school program, the director of the foundation said, hey, you know, if you ever come to the point where you like want to start your own project, like we would totally want to help you through that. So we'll like give you all the tools. I was like, what are you talking about? You're crazy.
You sure
I don't want to have my own project.
Just all in concert, manipulating
yeah,
you.
Yeah, exactly. Pushing me towards this. I was like, I don't want to do that. No.
Yeah, like, just randomly.
Yeah. And
you
know, then,
do you
yeah.
think you want to do your own? If you do want to do your own thing.
Yeah. So it worked out perfectly because at the time that I was ready to move on to something new, like my other Thai colleagues were also ready to move on to something new. So we were just kind of having lunch and like, hey, what if we did this? We've been talking about doing this, something with families for a long time. I mean, right. Now we all have a lot of skills and experience. Let's just do it. So we had to do, there's like a huge, the foundation does have like a 20-page like project description template. They want you to think through all the eventualities. Like, what's the point of doing this? How are you addressing things that other people aren't addressing? Like, what's your plan of action, all that stuff. So our first year, we focused just on like workshops for students in rural areas so that we could teach them trafficking prevention strategies.
Okay.
So we have like a whole series of things that we taught. So for parents, we taught about positive parenting skills. Students learned about human rights. They learned about safe and unsafe touch to protect from sexual abuse. They learned about how to have a healthy romantic relationship, that kind of stuff. And so we did that in about 5 communities. The plan was to do it in 1 community and then other people heard and then we did it in other
They're like, hey, come over here.
Totally. And we actually got a grant to start that program from a group called Vital Voices out of DC. So that was like perfect timing. It was kind of hilarious because we were still going through the process with the foundation to become official. And then I was like, oh, by the way, we're getting like $10,000. So can you put that in our account? They're like, what? You don't even have an account. I was like, you better make one.
Yeah, the money's on its way.
It's on its way. So then they were like, okay, I guess you're approved.
Yeah, apparently you're real. Yeah.
So that was our first year. And then we did a lot of preparation to and research on how to do a good, strong family strengthening program. So I read about programs that have been working in other countries to prevent kids from ending up in orphanages due to poverty. Because that's a huge issue in Thailand, too. Like we have like close to 90,000 kids in orphanages in Thailand. But the recent statistics say that anywhere between 90 and 95% of them have living relatives that they could live with. It's just that they don't have the money to provide enough food or provide education for them.
I see.
So they send the kids to orphanages. So the orphanage pays for school and food. So I read about a lot of programs that like kind of try to keep kids in their family.
Right. Supplement their
Help them kind of have their own income generating project. So they're more sustainable.
Right.
So we started planning for that. And one of the communities that we were doing the trafficking prevention workshops in was just had a lot of issues. And so we thought, well, our goal is to do this program with kids who have gone from orphanages back into their biological family to help their family remain strong.
Right.
But while we're still kind of creating a relationship with the orphanages and with the foster care program that's coming up, emerging in Thailand, we said, here's this community that's in one location. Why don't we start there? And so we asked the village leadership. We were like, hey, we have this idea for this program. Like, what do you think? And they're like, oh, that would be so awesome. So we got the village leadership team involved and we said, you guys know everyone the best. So here's, you know, application forms. Like, you guys sit with your community and then fill out the forms. And then we met at the end of the month and they said, these are the people that we think would benefit the most and would actually commit to being part of the program. So we started that in March 2018. So it's been 1 year since we started that program.
All right. Well, I want to remind the listeners that this is KX93.5 and you are listening to the Importance of Being show. Today, my guest is Heather Askew. And she is with JoJo Sanctuary in Thailand. And we will be back with more from Heather right after this. We have to be ready. And we are. This is KX93.5.
Weary sun, sleep tonight. Go crashing into the ocean. Cut the line that ties the tide and moon, ancient and blue. Every time we turn away, it hits me like a tidal wave. If I would change for you, but babe, it doesn't mean I'm gonna be a better man. Suffer.
All righty. This is KX93.5, and you're listening to The Importance of Being Show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman. We do this show live every Sunday morning from 9 to 10. And today, I am delighted to have in studio, all the way from Thailand, Heather Askew from JoJo Sanctuary, all the way from Thailand. Hey, how are you?
Hi.
Hi again.
Hi again.
So we've been talking about your work, or a kind of how you got started in your work, helping orphans, basically, and helping families, helping, I guess, to provide resources to help families keep their kids.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you went to Thailand for an after-school program, and then saw other things that needed help or needed support, and you just rolled up your sleeves and dug in.
Pretty much.
What kind of person does that kind of thing?
I'm a crazy person, I guess. I'm super lucky because I'm actually really good at languages, as it turns out, surprisingly. untapped skill that I never knew about in childhood. But so I actually learned Thai pretty quick.
Okay.
I asked my Thai friend once, I was like, so how long, people always ask me how long it took me to become fluent. Like, what would you say? She's like, I mean, you were fluent in like 6 months. I was like, really? She's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, I'll take it.
Wow.
So yeah, so I can speak Thai and I speak a little bit. There's a lot of tribal languages in that area. So I speak a little bit of Akka. My first foster daughter was Akka. That's her tribe. So I can speak a little of that. I speak a little bit of Karen and a little bit of Hmong. Very little bit. I can say like two or three phrases, but because those are my teammates are from that background. So
where's the bathroom? Yeah,
exactly. Hi, how are you? Goodbye. And where's the bathroom? That's pretty much it. Yeah. But
so you decide with your Thai friends that you're going to build an organization. And you float the idea and you get some money and you're going. So how did you decide what needed to be done
or
what your approach would be?
When I was working at, when all of us worked at the after school program, it's called Ta Sang, we had a few kids. So that first kind of started when we had a few kids who had single parent homes and then the parents didn't have citizenship. Like they were immigrants. They didn't have citizenship. So they would get arrested for like a petty crime because they're trying to feed their kids.
Oh, got it.
So then these kids who also didn't have citizenship are on no one's radar. So like the government doesn't care, you know, what they're not like, oh, let's put your kid in foster care. So this was my response. Like, oh, well, this kid came to our, you know, the center and was like, okay, my mom got arrested. I don't really know what I'm supposed to do. And they're like 10. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, we call the social workers. They go into foster care. And the Thai staff just sort of looked at me with blank stares. Like, what are you talking about? And I was like, do you not have, no? Okay. So we were like passing the kid around from week to week. I'm like, this is totally a violation of child protection policies in America. Like, right, you can't just take a kid home with you. But I was like, I mean, what's the other option? They're just like sleeping on the street at 10. So that was the first thing that we noticed. We were like, okay, there needs to be something that is a short-term possibility because if a parent dies or something, then the kid goes into the orphanage.
Okay.
Or into a, you know, private, or if parents decide to put the kid into a private orphanage for education purposes. But there's nothing, there wasn't anything set up that was a short-term foster care situation with the goal of getting kids back in their biological families. So we thought, this is a big issue. These are kids that are falling through the cracks. We're like, these two children can't be the only kids in the history of Thailand to have this issue. Like, there has to be other things going on. So, and then when I went and worked at HUG Project, which works with victims of trafficking, I noticed that every single one of those kids had family breakdown where they were living with various family members, mom, dad, in and out of jail, whatever.
The after picture of the kids that you were getting.
Exactly. So I was like, okay, these are areas that no one's really focusing on in Chiang Mai. And another issue that a lot of kids have is lack of citizenship. So like in America, if you're born in America, you get citizenship, right? And actually, I think that's the case for almost every country in the world. Like, you get citizenship by being born in the country. That's not the case in Thailand. You have to prove that you have been there, your family has been there for a certain amount of time. You have to have paperwork. And most of the kids who don't have citizenship were born in like mountainous regions where they don't have hospitals, right?
Right.
So not only do they not have hospitals, no one tells the parents, okay, when you have a baby in the village, now you have to walk the 3 hours to the hospital with your newborn in less than 10 days. pay 2 days worth of salary to get a birth certificate, then go walk another few hours to the government office, register that paperwork, and then when the kid turns 7, you'll get a resident card. Like, no one tells people this. So they're just supposed to know it instinctually, I guess.
It's not broke.
So, yeah. So then the kids go to school and the parents are like, what paperwork are you talking about? And then they go to the government office and the government office is like, this child's 6 years old. Like, what are you telling me? Like, I don't, they could have been born anywhere. So this is a big issue. And so without citizenship, just like in the States, it's like not having a social security card, right? So like you can't get a job, you can't have health insurance, you can't get a driver's license, you can't have own property, you can't leave the state, you can't, like, there, like, lack of mobility. It's kind of a big issue.
Yep.
So we focus on that a lot because especially if you have no citizenship, no one knows you exist. So it's pretty easy to make you disappear into trafficking, right?
Right.
So we were like, well, if we can start to resolve that issue, then that will go a ways to preventing trafficking from happening. So that's sort of how we saw the needs and decided to focus on those areas. So
right. Okay, so you build an organization and you focus on one thing, but the problem's bigger than that, right? And there you need way more resources than you could possibly provide all by yourself,
Right?
Yeah,
of course.
So you try to plug, or you do plug into other organizations and try to give them capacity or support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do a lot of collaboration. So we collaborate for the foster care development, we collaborate with the local orphanage because they are doing a localized foster care program. And we work with Care for Children, which is trying to help work directly with the government, the high up in the government, to make the entire country switch to foster care.
Got it.
We partner with a lot of other organizations within our foundation, within the Parent Foundation. We've been doing, and in fact, today, I just talked to my teammates today, they're driving up to Maesot, which is a refugee camp on the border of Thailand and Burma. So there's a few different organizations from Chiang Mai that are going up together to provide training for people who work in organizations there, provide like education on like working with kids and give some counseling and just like talk to parents about positive parenting techniques, just a lot of different just like you say, capacity building. Because no one can do anything by themselves. And we're very much like, let's not reinvent the wheel. Does this exist anywhere else? Let's just like copy that and adapt it.
you might be Superwoman. Who knows?
I don't know about that. Basically like our trafficking prevention programs are all like, oh, well, we like this from this program and this from this program. So let's just put them together. So we're not like reinventing the wheel. We're just like taking what we like from existing programs packaging it in a new way.
These are the things that work, best practices sort of thing.
Yeah. And we're teaching, like we've been having over the past year and a half, we've been working with children's homes to equip their staff with all these different trafficking prevention workshops so they can teach their kids. Because like when we did it ourselves, we taught 150 kids in a year, but our staff is 3 people. So we can't do it everywhere. And so we thought we could teach 150 adults and each of those 150 adults could teach 150 kids way more effective.
Right.
So yeah. So that's what we've been doing last.
And so you've been doing this for 3 years?
Yeah. We started JoJo's Sanctuary in May 2016.
Do you see an impact?
We've seen, so for citizenship, we got 6 cases completed last week in one location, which is amazing. Normally it takes like 3 to 4 years to finish a case, but in this particular case, all their paperwork is already in order. And so they just needed someone to take them to the government office and like help them work through the paperwork and like, you know, do an interview basically to prove that we've known these people for a long time. They're really here.
Yep.
They're really family.
Yep.
So 6 people got citizenship. So that's like their whole lives changed. All their kids' lives will be changed. And then for our family strengthening program, we've been doing that for a year. And initially I was like, I have no idea if this is going to work, but let's just try it and see. Let's hope. So in my opinion, I was like, okay, this program is 18 months long. We do every other month. We do a workshop about how to have healthy families. We talk about finances. We talk about human rights. We talk about healthy eating, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And then alternate months, we do family field trips. So we go to the museum or we go to a waterfall, or we go to the zoo, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of it, we're going to have a family camp. So I'm like, okay, well, maybe by the end of like 18 months, one family will have brought their kids back from the orphanage to their family. That would be good.
That'd be
good. Like, that would be progress. Well, we started in March, and by May, two families that were about to send their kids to an orphanage decided to keep their kids. Wow. Two families that already had kids in the orphanage brought them home. Wow. We were like, oh, this is great. And then we were like, okay, but now that the kids are home, how are they going to feed the kids? Because one of the problems is they didn't have money for the kids.
Right.
So then we're like, okay, we're going to need to do like an income generating project for them. So so each family got a $500 like grant, not in cash, but in kind. So we had everybody like write down, make us a budget of what you want to do and what will improve your family's lives and help you get extra income. So we have two families that are doing raising pigs. One's raising chickens. One's raising cows. Four are doing sewing. They all got sewing machines. Okay. And now, like, so we had the people who got sewing machines get trained on how to do them, and they learned how to make a couple, like, bags. And then one of the women was like, went to the market and was like, oh, people love these like Thai elephant pants. I probably could make those. So she buys a pair, takes it home, deconstructs it, buys the fabric material, copies it, kind of like puts her own little spin on it, makes it. She's like, yep. Hey, I made these. I was like, oh my gosh, you can make those pants? I like could sell those in America. And then she's like, oh, okay. So I like order. I was like, ooh, I want extra larges because Americans are not all super tiny like Thai people. And I want shorts and capris and baby pants and all this stuff. She's like, okay. And then she taught everyone else in the village, the other ladies, how to use the sewing machines. And then the other people in the village who are not in the program but have sewing machines already, now she's going to teach them. So now they're like, okay, we have a name for our business and we have a logo for our business. And I'm like, that's awesome. I was like, I don't know anything about business, but so it's like totally transforming their like community. It's really exciting.
So you're infectious.
Yeah, I guess so. It's like a domino effect. it really was like kind of a reminder to me that I'm like, you know what? I think a lot of us probably have this sort of bias, like, oh, poor people are helpless, right? Like I need to give them stuff.
Right.
But I'm like, in actuality, they can do it themselves. They just need a tiny little boost. So it's like all we had to do was buy her a sewing machine and teach her how to use it. And then she was off to the races. So it's like, and now it's going to be like a community thing. Yeah.
You don't have to feed her every night.
Right. Exactly. It's totally like the teach a man to fish scenario, but in like action. So it's been really cool to see. There's like another family that was raising pigs and they were hilarious because they're like, listen, I want to raise pigs. But a couple of years ago, the village bought all these pigs. We all put them together and then we raised the pigs. But people had like different amounts of how much they actually fed them or how much they washed them. So then when we sell the pigs, there was like this huge fight and everyone was arguing about, I should get more money because I fed the pigs. I don't want any of that drama. I want my own pigs. We're like, you can have your own pigs.
That's all you need in the whole wide world.
So we bought them. We went with them to buy the supplies to build the pig pen, which again, I was like, do we have measurements? Do we have this? And they were like, what are you talking about? Like, we know how big it needs to be. I'm like, okay. They're like, we need this and this and this and this. They knew everything that they needed. I was just like, I'm just driving the truck. I don't know.
Just with them.
I have the cash. And then we bought two pigs for $60 each. 3 months later, the mom comes to me and she's like, okay, so you remember how you spent $60 on those pigs? I'm like, yeah. She's like, I just sold them for $300 each. I was like, what? $300 each? So she's like, now we've got money to fix the roof. We could put money in savings for the kids' school. Like, we've got money to buy food. We can buy four pigs instead of two pigs. She's like, I have a list of 15 people who are waiting for pigs and they have four. So she's like, never going to be out of pigs again. Like, yeah, there's never going to be a time when people are not wanting pigs because people eat them.
Right.
Because they use every single part of the pig in Thailand, you know?
Yeah.
So that's been really awesome too, to see their family grow and develop. And just their relationships have really gotten a lot better because they're learning how to communicate better. They're learning how to spend quality time together. So,
and the economic autonomy, if you will, mm-hmm. how does that change them? Do you see a difference in that?
I mean, I feel like I see that they have a lot more like pride. I feel like when we first went to the village, one of the village elders was like, you know, our village, we're pretty like hopeless. Like we don't have a lot of hope because the parents, like we never got to go to school. So most of us can't even read Thai. And then like, we don't know how to help our kids. So we think like, well, we just have to send the kids away. And so now it's like, we're really sad because our village doesn't have our kids. But he's like, now we can have our kids live with us and we know how to parent them better. And we actually have like a way to make more income. And even though we don't have education, we can still use our skills that we do have to better our lives. So I mean, just seeing like pictures of them from the beginning to now, it's like in the first pictures, everyone has kind of solemn faces. And now the pictures, everyone's like smiling and having like laughing.
Like
so,
you.
Yeah, like me. So, I mean, for me, like that's the best part, is seeing that their families are getting stronger and that they're like, the kids want to be with their parents. The parents want to be with their kids. Whereas right. before it was like, you know, they were kids just, be just... seen and not heard. Sit over there in the corner and play video games on your phone. Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a break. This is KX93.5. You're listening to The Importance of Being Show. My guest this morning is Heather Askew, and she runs JoJo's Sanctuary in Chiang Mai, Thailand. We'll be right back.
I think I should be a little more kind.
Oh, yes. There we go. hey, okay, we're back. This is KX93.5, and you are listening to The Importance of Being show. I'm your host, Ernest Hackman. We do this show live every Sunday morning from 9 to 10, and I have Heather Askew in studio. She's from JoJo Sanctuary, and she is working with orphaned kids and families to make Thailand a better place. With pigs.
With pigs.
So you've been doing this for 3 years. It's kind of blossoming into a great piece of connective tissue for the communities. What kind of help can people provide you? I mean, you can't do it all by yourself, right?
Right. We have three of us. There's two Thai staff and me.
You put the cape on and da-da-da-da.
Well, right now, people always ask me if like they could come do like internships or whatever. And unfortunately, 99% of the work we do actually happens in Thai. So if somebody doesn't speak Thai, it's a little hard to like get them in there. Hopefully in the future that will not be the case, but
so much getting water they can do.
One thing we'd love to do is have like groups from churches or community groups come and do like help us put on like family camps or English camps for some of the schools like in rural areas. We're connected with some schools like 3 hours outside the city, and literally we went, Christiana, who was here last week, I think, she came and in November to do art stuff. And basically, the school we went to, one of the schools we went to, like, that was the first time some of them had ever seen a white person not on TV. So they're like, if you ever have people that want to come and do English camps, that would be great. So we'd love to connect with groups in the future to do that. We're hoping to expand our Thai staff. We want to hire somebody to manage groups, teams that come. Also, we really want to hire like a family counselor to work with the families in the program, the foster families and the families in our Building Family Dreams strengthening program. So that's, you know, that obviously takes money. And the great thing about Thailand is that money goes really far. So even if you can only donate, like a lot of people are probably like, well, I don't have money to donate. It's like, well, actually, like you could donate like $10 a month and that would make a big difference. So like $5 a week pays for a kid's school lunch for a week. It's like $1 a day. But, you know, obviously like the other end of the spectrum is like $5,000 pays for like a whole year of our Building Family Dreams project for 40 people.
$5,000?
Yeah. I mean, you think it's like, that's hardly anything, but actually it goes so far. So, so there's like a whole spectrum of stuff, you know, for citizenship, it usually costs us like about $100 per trip because we have to go to really remote locations, to do that. And so everything like what is just a dollar in America actually goes a lot farther in Thailand. So So sponsorships are great. And just like awareness raising too, because like a big thing right now is trying to make people aware that, that orphanages are not a great way to support children and vulnerable children, because especially in Thailand, because like I said, 90% of those kids actually have families who, if they had a little bit of financial assistance, they would be able to care for the kids at home.
Right, and it would be
We really believe that like poverty is not a reason that kids should grow up apart from their families.
Right.
So like just raising awareness about that sort of thing. And Lumos. .org or wearelumos.org, which is J.K. Rowling's organization. They have a ton of information on orphanages around the world and like how you can get involved and like, you know, having kids be with their families. And so if you go on our website, we have a lot of links to stuff. Our website is jojosthailand.org.
Okay.
Very easy to remember.
JOJOS
Thailand.org.
All right. Wow.
And we have you can donate through PayPal. You could donate through our nonprofit website. And then you get a tax deduction at the end of the year for that. So, you can read. We do blogs like every month. You can read on our blog and you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. On Facebook, if you just search for JoJo Sanctuary, you'll find our page. And then on Twitter and Instagram, it's just JoJo's Thailand is how you can search. So we update that pretty regularly so you can stay up to date with all the different activities we have going on. And if we have different fundraising campaigns and stuff, you can get involved with that.
Awesome. Well, wow, that's very impressive. And thank you so much for coming in and being on the show.
Thanks for
having me. And hopefully when you come back, you can come and give us an update.
Yeah, I'd love to do that.
All right. This is KX93.5. You've been listening to the Importance of Being show. Coming up next is Steve Reed with the Coast Highway Shuffle. Thanks for listening.